Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to season two of Performance People with me, Georgie.
And me, Ben. Our guests this time round have 38 Olympic or Paralympic medals between them, 22 of them gold.
There are countless world records, 16 Everest summits, and the man responsible for some of the greatest inventions of our time.
And alongside them are their closest confidants. They will share what drives these exceptional individuals to their highest heights.
Performance People is free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, you can also follow us on our Performance People social channels.
Now enjoy this week's episode.
Joining us on today's Performance People are a husband and wife who've enjoyed unparalleled success competing on the water.
Hannah Mills is the most decorated female sailor in Olympic history and now leads the British women's programmes in both SailGP and the America's Cup.
And alongside Hannah's her husband Nick Dempsey, who's got three Olympic windsurfing medals of his own and has taken a path less trodden since retiring from competition.
These two performance people are redefining the work-life juggle.
I potentially got asked to do it again recently to go for Paris as a sort of late campaign, but it took a lot to think about it properly and say no.
I've decided to stop, well, change jobs. I've definitely not retired. I've definitely stopped my coaching role as an Olympic coach and travelling around the world.
Hannah, my first question.
Hello.
How much sleep did you get last night?
I don't think I should tell you that, Georgie. We did all right on sleep, didn't we? I reckon seven hours.
7 hours. How old is Sienna?
No.
She is 3.5 months.
Okay, how is this possible? Last night and for the last three nights running, I've been up at 4:30 every single morning. How is this possible? I need you two more in my life to fix my sleep issues with Fox. How is life? How is life for both of you now with Sienna in the world?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I would never have imagined how different and amazing it was going to be. I was not one of those people that was sort of, it was just amazing.
Were you a maternal person before Sienna?
No.
I don't think so, no.
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not, there we go. No, I mean, I definitely always grew up thinking I would have a family and wanted kids and stuff, but then I think career and drive for that maybe takes over a bit, and so maybe you lose a bit of perspective on other things. It was definitely not a definite after the Olympics we're gonna have a baby, was it? We had a good old chat about it.
So Nick, have you seen a major change in Hannah then? Because she's smitten, isn't she, with little Sienna, as she should be.
Yeah, she is. I always told her she would be. I said, you know, having your own child is very, very special. But she definitely wasn't sure. She kind of viewed it as a destruction of future life, as opposed to, the best thing that could happen to somebody. And I think she viewed it very much as an investment in her retirement to have someone look after when she's old.
No, I didn't. You did. I was just scared. I was just scared that it would just mean that I couldn't pursue the things that I cared about. and career opportunities and things. So it felt like it would be a line in the sand, maybe career wise, which was my biggest sort of fear, I guess. I wanted to wait another 3 or 4 years. But I think we
should get a close up of baby Sienna so that we can see this performance baby in the making, and everybody who's watching can understand what we're talking about here. There she is. Oh, look. Oh, she looks so happy and healthy. I can't believe you've got her just right at your side there, and she's behaving brilliantly. Would that have ever happened in our world?
She's also in one of your outfits, Georgie, actually.
Not my outfit, Hannah.
It could be.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I'm small, but I'm not that small.
One of Bellatrix's outfits. Or Fox, maybe. I don't know.
I think it's one of Bellatrix's many outfits. That's the problem. You completely overdo it with baby number one, I think, because you just get completely overexcited about all these different opportunities to dress them up. And then when you get to baby number two, you're like, no, it's fine. You can wear whatever Bellatrix had, regardless of it being pink or whatever else. But you've got a lot of her hand-me-downs, that's quite right.
We do. She's got an amazing wardrobe.
Yeah, I'm impressed. You seem to have the whole thing fully under control in pretty short time, so good on you. but it's still a game changer,
for now,
though, isn't
it? We have it under control.
It's a game changer, yeah. I mean, she can't move yet, so yeah, she's relatively under control. But once she starts moving, I think we might say something different.
Yeah, just you wait until you take those flights when they're like 18 months old and they're desperate to walk down the aisle of a plane on its way to the Far East or whatever. That's a complete game changer. Got all that to look forward to. Talk about your travelling, though, with her, because she's already been jet-setting across the world. And Hannah, you came back so fast. So within 3 months, you were back on the Sail GP boat, having had Sienna. So what was that weekend like? Were you nervous? Were you worried about it? Did you feel that it was too soon? Or did you feel that there was pressure for you to get back? I mean, how did that whole weekend play out for you?
Yeah, I was really, really nervous, actually. More nervous probably than I've ever been about doing something. And I think the nerves were more just I really wanted my body to be okay and hold up, and I had no idea. You know, I did a lot of work before we went to Singapore to try and get in a good place, but there's nothing like going on an F50. You can't replicate that anywhere. So yeah, it was a complete unknown. And then also with the racing, you know, I hadn't been on a boat for over a year, hadn't raced for over a year, and so I was pretty nervous about how well I'd do at that. So yeah, there was a lot of nerves. I was pretty terrified, wasn't I? But it felt like another mental challenge that I guess as competitors you're used to dealing with and putting yourself in those positions all the time.
And Nick, what about you? Because you went with Hannah and you went as a family on that adventure, and it's kind of set the tone for what's coming in the future. So just tell us a bit about how it sort of changed your outlook.
Yeah, we... Sorry.
She will probably
She's very chatty. We definitely viewed Singapore as a real trial of how the future could look and how we would love the future to look. You know, it is the dream to be able to go around the world as a unit. But we didn't know how family friendly it would be. We didn't know how Sienna would be. We didn't know how the environment would be for a family and how welcoming SailGP and Ben and the team would be. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because it is a performance environment and you don't want to be the one there with a screaming baby upsetting the tone of the whole regime. So it was, it did go really well. Really, really well, and I think it's allowed us to plan for the future a little bit better and make a few more decisions about how we go about things.
So, what does that look like? What are you saying?
Well, I've decided to stop. Well, change jobs. I've definitely not retired, but I've definitely stopped my coaching role as an Olympic coach and traveling around the world. That was very much going in opposite directions to the way we viewed it. And how it could work. I think me going away one direction, Hannah going the other, meant that we just had a simple problem of, you know, who looks after Sienna? And, you know, you could potentially get some help there, but then it's always the decision of, you know, what do you want in life? Do you want to live as a family unit and travel as a unit, or do you want to, you know, work and, you know, all that pay goes on someone else doing it for you? So, yeah, so I've stopped that job, which was difficult, a difficult decision. It was my dream job. But, you know, other opportunities come along and we have
it's
right now. Yeah, right now we have a moment in life that we can just actually take stock a little bit and actually live for once rather than just chasing work and chasing careers.
Wow, that's a major concession to make, especially when you say it was your dream job.
Yeah, it was my dream job. It was difficult to stop because it was very much an unfinished project. You know, we're only a year and a half out from the Olympics. And in that squad, I have people that can win Olympic gold medals. And they're really actually starting to fire, and the Olympic trials are starting in, you know, 6 weeks' time. So it's quite the time to take that decision. But for us, you know, we don't always make decisions based on our family. You know, actually probably we're both pretty guilty of making decisions based on our careers and our wants and our drive. But something has to give at some point, because two people like this, chasing stuff doesn't work. So,
was there a moment where the both of you came together? I mean, did something happen, or was there a catalyst for this that you just said, you know, we've got to rethink this?
I think the last 4 months we've been trying to put our calendars together, and we kept either revisiting or ignoring the fact that, you know, we'd look at the summer and we'd say, it's not possible. You know, there is no one to look after Sienna. What are we going to do? And we didn't really make the decision because it was such a, you know, I had said, you know, I can stop coaching and I can do something else. But it was always, no, Nick, I don't want you to do that. I know that's the job you love. It doesn't have to come to that. But I think in reality, it did have to come to that, which I'm fine with because, you know, it's not just a give up. You know, I gain an awful lot in doing that. But it's the right thing to do right now for us.
Yeah, it's an incredibly brave thing to do as well. You know, like I said,
you wouldn't do it.
I couldn't afford to do it. The amount of money you spend, there's no way I'm going to be working to the grave. But it is. Having seen you, you know, Nick, it was really impressive. You know, like you say, it worked really well having the family in Singapore. And, you know, as a fellow dad, it was really impressive to see, you know, how much you enjoyed that as well, I think, for you, wasn't it? And a great opportunity to spend time with Sienna. And I think that was probably a big part of the decision.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it was certainly my first time where Hannah had just, you know, here you go, good luck. That it very much felt like I was the, I know, it's the wrong terminology, but to say the leading parent in that situation, the person that takes overall responsibility. And I was like, oof, okay, good luck to me. Especially living out of a hotel, little child, it's hot, you know, in a foreign environment. It's not like it's at home where you've got everything on tap and you know what's going on. So for me to come through unscathed and have a little baby girl that was still alive at the end of the week was a big thing for me. I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. I can do this. I've got this.
Let's reverse that round though, Hannah, because what was it like for you? Because I know right at the beginning with Bellatrix and with Fox, like you, I don't know, some mums are not like this, but I am definitely a control freak around the children and like to assume that lead parent role. So with that in mind, what was it like for you sort of saying, okay, I mean, obviously Nick's her dad, it's fine, but actually you're going off to do your day job and, you know, suddenly you and Sienna are not in that same dynamic as you've been used to.
Yeah, I mean, we'd had a few days before Christmas where I'd been into London for the day. And so Nick had a little practice, hadn't you, of being that lead parent. I mean, from day one, we really wanted to make sure that Nick felt, I don't know, as involved as possible. I think it's easy as a mum to just completely take over because, well, I was lucky enough to be able to breastfeed and do all of that. And yeah, you just get into a rhythm of doing it all. And so I think it's been nice to kind of reset that balance and for Nick to feel, you know, an amazing bond with Sienna now. I think having had that week in Singapore, I think that really changed your relationship as well. But yeah, it is scary letting go.
Did you feel guilty at any point? It's always the way, and it never happens with men, but it always happens with women, where journalists ask the woman whether, you know, how that sort of whole dynamic is playing out. And it can be quite stressful dealing with that question again and again that keeps coming and how the juggle works. I mean, did it ever on that weekend get sort of emotionally quite exhausting, as well as obviously physically a challenge?
Actually not. Like, we were so lucky with the setup. You know, Nick and Sienna would come to the base in the morning, and so I could, I'm still breastfeeding, so could give Nick the milk for when I was on the water that I'd express before we had to go sailing. So I'd see them then, and then they'd be there straight away when we came back in. So it was sort of only a 5-hour window really where we were apart. So it was kind of fine. It's the days where you're in London for the day and you leave at 6 or 7 and you don't get back till 6 or 7. They're the ones that definitely pull a bit more. And you do feel a bit guilty. Yeah, definitely.
So two competitive people living in one household. I mean, Nick, even though that you've parked this dream job for, Hannah described it as a sabbatical, it may be however long it is, you still have that competitive spirit, right? You're bound to. That's sort of in your nature. So we've talked about this many times before with different couples who've sort of held these roles in the past, in their past lives. How do you balance out your competitive natures, you two, living under one roof?
Oh, I would say we've worked on it.
Very hard.
I'd definitely say at the beginning of our relationship, probably for the first 4 or 5 years, we used to definitely rub each other up the wrong way. And we would, you know, we'd play sports with each other and it generally wouldn't go that well. I'm
Who would
never
win?
That happy. Me.
Me. Unbelievable. Anyway.
What's the most competitive What's the most competitive sporting environment you've ever put yourselves in? Against one another.
Table tennis.
Table
tennis. Always table tennis. Yeah.
And how does that generally pan out?
I generally take a few games off Hannah. She generally wins.
Yeah.
Tell us about that moment that you had with table tennis at the Tokyo Games, because I think it's a great story.
Every Olympic Games, moment. Every Olympic Games, the British sailing team has a table tennis in the team area, and it's quite a nice bonding place. Everyone plays, you know, each other. Everyone gets involved. And Hannah used to warm up every day playing table tennis. On this particular day, I was giving her a game, and I am quite annoying to play. I chop at it and I loop it, and there's no backcourt rally when
it's just
I play.
Not that good. That's the problem.
But I can get it back always. And so I look shit when I play, and Hannah looks great and graceful when she plays and hits it with top spin and et cetera. Anyway, I beat her 2 full games in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
And she got so angry and so worked up that she didn't, I don't think she said anything. I think she smashed the bat on the table and threw it. I'm not joking. She threw it full pace and straight past my head. I think it hit the window and just dropped to the floor, and she stormed out. And from that moment, she wasn't allowed to warm up playing table tennis anymore. I think Saskia had had enough.
Yes, yeah.
I don't think that's
was that the, that's was that the morning mood. Of a big race? Was that the morning of a big race?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was the test event. So the year before the games, we always have sort of a practice. Always have a practice, and that was the test event, which is a big part of the actual qualification for the Olympics. So it was one of those mornings, and I was just in such a bad mood all day. Thing is, right, when you play Nick at anything, or maybe it's just me, but when I play Nick at anything, he's so smug. He's just so smug and just, oh, he just knows exactly how to wind me up to get all of the reaction. So yeah, we've learned to.
I've stopped winding her up nowadays.
Did you
have a good day on the water? Did you have a good day on the water?
Certainly not. No, that's probably why Sass banned me from playing table tennis.
Okay, I was going to say, because if it fired you up for the racing, maybe you know.
See, that's what he's thinking about. That's where his head went.
We should get it back on for Sergi
P. Yeah, before long, you know that there's going to be a table tennis table, don't you, at Sergi P events? Or maybe not, because it didn't work out so well.
It doesn't sound like it.
That's a good shout, though, actually. We should,
but you know, as couples, you really, you know which buttons to press all the time.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to wind them up. We used to do that a lot, but we tend not to try not. I tend to try not to anymore.
I'd say we don't anymore. We basically never argue anymore.
We don't.
Yeah. You've got it all out of your system. That's what happens. You get it all out of your system.
Yeah.
That's, and you've got a distraction as well.
That's true. You've got a new distraction.
We do.
Which you fundamentally have to agree over. Yeah, it's true.
Definitely.
It's true. So I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics because, well, you three have all done at least three, I guess. I've done none, so I'd like to learn. In terms of leaving that life behind, how big a deal is it to do that? Because it becomes such a massive part of your lives. It's not like a sort of a job which sort of exists for sort of a 10-year period. I mean, it's like 4 years and then back to it again and then another 4 years, then back. I mean, it's just completely exhausting, I would have thought, having to peak at a particular time and then, you know, come down from that and then have to go again, and the structure, the routine, everything that you need to put into one. Hannah, probably you first of all, what was it like saying goodbye to the world of the Olympics?
Yeah, hard, actually. Much harder than I thought. Like, I thought Rio was probably going to be my last one, and then for various reasons decided to do Tokyo, and especially with the delay due to the pandemic of the games, I thought I'd be, you know, fully ready to say goodbye. But actually, it probably took me about eight months or so to kind of get over almost the sadness of saying goodbye to the Olympics, because it's so addictive. It's 3 years of incredibly hard work and stress and pressure. And then the final year has all of that, but is just amazing. You know, that build up to the games itself is the most incredible thing to be a part of. So, yeah, to say goodbye and that's it is really hard. It's really sad. It's like grieving for something almost. It was not easy. And actually, I potentially got asked to do it again recently to go for Paris as a sort of late campaign. But it took a lot to think about it properly and say no.
Wow, stop a second, because you had retired. So when did that happen?
Like a couple of weeks ago. Nick's face when I told him.
So how did that conversation go?
I'm glad you turned that down.
Yeah. Ben's got a vested interest here. So how did that come about?
Well, I think, you know, the class that I sail has gone mixed. So it used to be men and women split and a medal for each, and now it's gone mixed. So it's slightly different, different thing. And in that class, you know, Ailey, who I had been sailing with, she's actually just sort of stepped back for a bit from it. An opportunity came along that was, do you want to have a go? Because no one's really performing in that class right now. And I think we could be a really strong team. And you have to think about everything, don't you, before you just rule it out. But Nick was definitely not best pleased having just stepped back.
Okay, what was the conversation like between you two? Nick, what was your reaction when Hannah mentioned it?
There wasn't much conversation, if I'm honest. In life, we're pretty good in understanding and, you know, let's think about this, what are the pros and cons, you know, let's not decide anything. It was a flat no. From me.
It was, yeah.
It wasn't even a discussion. It was just so you're clear, this is a no. You can't do that. Which she already knew. I didn't have to push it too hard. She already knew that was the answer. She already knew that she shouldn't do it. She can do it. Of course, she can do anything she wants, but I don't think it was the right thing for her as a human being.
And why would you say that? What leads to that decision making?
I think it's... To do it again would be completely and utterly based on an emotional drive towards the Olympic Games, which, for me, she doesn't need to do. She's already got two Olympic gold medals and a silver medal, and she has opportunity now to do something really special, you know, with Ben, and then alongside Ben with a lot of the sustainability stuff she does, which she absolutely loves. I mean, she absolutely loves it. So as a partner, it's my job to make sure that she, to kind of help her steer her in the right direction, because these emotional pulls come all the time in life. But I think, we both knew that that's not the right thing for her to do, and it's not the right thing for her happiness. I think it's just stepping back into an environment you know you could do well, and it is difficult when someone says, do you want to win another Olympic gold medal? You know, of course, most people would be like, yeah, okay, let's do it. But I don't think it's the right thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting that, isn't it? It's kind of chapters in your life. You're sort of looking at different chapters in your life. Ben, when you decided to quit after London 2012, what was that like? That was like a home games in front of a home crowd. How did that feel to sort of walk away from that then?
Yeah, I guess it felt quite obvious. It was obviously the right thing to do. I guess I'd always tried to have a plan what to do after the Olympics. The first Olympics I went to, I'm sure it's the same for Nick and Hannah, afterwards you feel this emptiness because you've been training day in, day out for this thing for over 4 years probably, most of your adult life, and then suddenly it all stops. So after that, I always made sure that I had another focus to go straight into after the games. And after 2012, I had the America's Cup in San Francisco. So it was natural to sort of move on to that. And then also physically, I was really struggling with the boat that I was sailing in, and had some back surgery and so on. So yeah, it was still a big decision. And I guess for me, I've always been quite good at compartmentalizing things like that and just sticking it to the back of the head. But then 4 years later, when it came round to Rio.
You weren't very good at watching it.
And watching the racing. Then it suddenly sort of all came back to me, and that was tough.
Yeah. Literally, I'd be like, let's watch this. No, I don't want to watch it. Don't want to see it. Got no interest in watching it. It's like, come on. No. It's an emotional thing, isn't it? But Nick, how about you? Are you the same as these two, or are you different in your thinking about waving goodbye to Olympics?
I was absolutely done. I was out of there pretty quick and happy. It's really tough, Olympic campaigns. They're really, really, really tough. And I had done 5 Olympics, and I would have been 36 at the time. And for me, it was probably one too many mentally. I personally don't like the person. I don't think I was the best version of me as an Olympic athlete. I think I was probably, a little bit harsh at times and a little bit win at all costs. And that's not really the person I aspire to be. So it was nice to come away from it and actually take a different view on life. And, it wasn't all about winning, and you didn't have to just do whatever was required in life. It was quite a nice, refreshing way. So I don't regret anything. It's all fine. It's all great. It's amazing. But certainly coming out the other side and viewing life differently is quite refreshing.
And the physicality, windsurf, unbelievably tough physically, right? The training, not just the competition, but the training you had to put in.
What does that look like in training terms, Nick?
Well, it's pretty much like any elite athlete. You have all the physical stuff. So, you train for maybe 2 to 3 hours out off the board a day. Whether that was, 2 hours on the bike in the morning and then an hour in the evening, whether that was strength stuff or core stability stuff. You'd be in the gym for something, because somebody would say, I'd say, well, will it help? And they'd say, yeah, it'll help. So then you just do it. And it wasn't all the time, but a lot of the days you'd have these 3-session days, which were just brutal. And you'd do 4 of those, and then you'd have a day off. Then you'd do another 4, and you'd have a day off. And then you progressively grind yourself into a hole. And then you'd need, 4 or 5 days off. Or you'd have an event coming up that you could taper into. It's the same as any elite athlete. You're training at maximum capacity and you don't have much wavelength outside of sport. So I think, life does suffer a lot. But they are just part, there's just come, it's part of it. You get used to giving up other stuff. I'm not calling it sacrificing because I don't believe in sacrificing. It's all decisions that you make.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But it's tough, really tough. Tough to do for that long.
Yeah. And Hannah, from your side, like, building yourself back up physically, you know, to Singapore and then beyond, breastfeeding Sienna at the same time and everything else that's going on around the edges of that physically. How's that getting back on the boat? I mean, how you know, did that period sort of work out for you in terms of your nutrition and your exercise and your training? How hard has it been? I mean, I know we're joking about the fact you're getting loads of sleep, but that's going to come and go, right? That's going to be in waves. So how do you manage that?
Honestly, you just have to set expectations and make them not too high, basically, which I think it's a skill I've learned to do, I think, over the years for various things, is making sure you set realistic expectations of yourself and of everything around you. And that's definitely what we had to do. You know, I definitely didn't arrive at Singapore having done physically everything I could to be ready at all, because that just wasn't at all possible. And also with breastfeeding, you know, you have to be really careful with how much you do, and you know, you're more prone to injury and all that kind of stuff. So I made sure I underdid it rather than overdid it in terms of getting back and feeling ready. And I definitely went to Singapore with a really open mindset of, if it doesn't feel right, then I don't have to do this. So all those expectations were kind of set at the right level, I think, for me. But yeah, it's hard. It's just hard, isn't it? It's hard juggling everything and wanting to do the best job you possibly can at everything. It's definitely a hard balance. And
yeah, you have to kind of take the pressure off a little, right? You have to take the pressure off a little.
And
like you say, just set expectations at a different place, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Otherwise, you just always feel like you're failing at everything. Mm. And that's really hard to deal with for anybody. So, yeah, set the right expectations and just be flexible. You know, she's going to have nights where she's not going to sleep. And we're going to have days where she's just needs a lot of attention and all the time. And that's okay. And just give myself a break a little bit and allow that to be okay.
Yeah, that sounds pretty sensible. She'll be on the boat before you know it. You realise that, don't you?
She's already been on the boat.
She's been on the boat already. Yeah. Has she really?
Yeah, luckily. Oh. Not on the water, luckily. But yeah, on land. Yeah.
Oh. In terms of coming back onto that boat with all the guys and sort of finding your place back in the team and stuff, was that easy enough to do?
Yeah. Do you know what? A lot easier than I thought. You just have no idea. You know, no idea what the environment's going to be like, what people are going to be like. You know, as Nick said, it's a performance environment. And, you know, suddenly we're throwing a baby into that mix, which is not necessarily performance related. So, yeah, but I think, you know, I've been so lucky with SailGP and with Ben and the team, just how accommodating and open everyone's been to creating that environment that I feel like I can still perform as an athlete and get everything I need, but equally have the family and Sienna where she needs to be as well, which is just amazing. And there's so few sporting environments, I think, that could be done and people would be that open to. So I feel so, so lucky that we've managed to achieve that through so much support. It was only the other day that I was reading, there's a French offshore sailor who has been dropped by a sponsor because I don't think she'll be ready after having a baby to do the race in time. And you just think in this day and age, in 2023, that's still happening when, you know, she's like, I'm 100% going to be ready. So yeah, I'd feel really lucky.
Hannah, what's Ben like to sail on a boat with?
I think we should move on.
No.
People aren't going to be interested
No. This is, some people will be interested.
This is about family.
Some will.
About,
you know. I'm interested.
What's he like? What's he like to sail with on a boat?
What is he like to sail on a boat?
You can be very, honest. Very honest. We're in a safe space.
Are we? Okay,
yeah, there aren't too many people listening to this.
Yeah. What's he like? He's intent, focused, honestly, just quite impressive to kind of watch. Sorry, Ben, this is going to be embarrassing. But yeah, quite impressive to kind of watch how he kind of gets into the right mindset for the racing and, you know, switches on. And it's just cool to see any sports person who's incredible at what they do up close. And yeah, I literally get to be right behind him. So I'm right there. So yeah, it's very, very cool to watch and witness. Obviously, there can be moments where there's a bit of frustration and anger, but I think we all get like that, you know. We want to win. We're competitive and you know, racing is hard. So, yeah, it's just part of it. But, yeah, it's very cool to see.
Lots of people refer to him as the sort of Jekyll and Hyde character, where he's sort of, you know, this very sort of gentlemanly-like behaviour off the water and then a sort of shark on it. I mean, you presumably have quite similar attributes, I'm imagining. Nick, would you kind of describe Hannah in that way?
Yeah. I never understand how someone so kind, loving and caring can be such a weapon on the water. She is completely different. I would not like to race against Hannah. I really wouldn't.
Ben, what's Hannah like to sail with? Let's flip it round. What's she like to sail with? I mean, you know, she grew up watching you do what you do. So what's it like having her alongside you now?
Well, I think, like Hannah said, it's that, you know, it's that mindset that all sports people have, and it just depends, you know, how high certain people can notch that up when it comes to the racing environment and performing under pressure. And Hannah, you know, is incredibly impressive in terms of when she steps onto the boat, she's totally focused on the processes and what's important in terms of getting ready for the race and then going through the race itself and making those key decisions and understanding, especially when the pressure's on, understanding what input's appropriate and when. And that takes a lot of experience and
great
understanding of high performance mindset to know when to input.
But great individual talent doesn't always translate, does it, to great team talent? So how do you make that? So you guys as well, you'll know this, especially being, you know, from a single-handed sailing past. I mean, how do you make that transition where it's a bigger team now? It's a bigger thing that you're doing and you're doing it collectively together. So is there a, and I kind of, I think I'm where I'm coming from is that the expectations you put on other people as well, because you're absolutely at the top of your game. You know, do you get disappointed if other people don't come up to scratch as you would expect them to? Or, you know, do you have to be more tolerant? I mean, how does that sort of play out on a SailGP boat? Hannah, maybe you go first.
Yeah. I mean, sailing in a team is hard for sure, because your expectations of yourself are like, you know, sky high. And definitely, you know, when you don't feel like other people in the team are necessarily doing that themselves, or they're not performing to the level that you're wanting them to, it's definitely hard. But I've certainly learned through my career that everyone, you know, is a bit like this in terms of, you know, up and down, and for various reasons, because there's outside influences on everybody affecting their level of performance. And so as a team, it's understanding that, and it's helping in whatever capacity, or putting the right things in place for each individual to be able to bring the level that they need to bring on the day. And it's definitely, you know, it's about if something goes wrong in the race, it's having that mindset of what's next. You know, it's always a question of, that's happened, what's next, how can we solve it, rather than dwelling on what's happened, blaming people and all of that stuff. It's all those things that make a team successful. And then for me, it's empowering people, you know, empowering individuals to own their role. And I think if someone's owning their role, then they're going to bring the best versions of themselves.
That's a very good answer. Try and better that.
I can't. It's absolutely, as most times with Hannah, Hannah every now and about once a week just send me through some emails about thoughts about where things are going with different teams and other areas of focus. And she's not, most of the time it's just one response which is spot on. Which, you know, she's got a total understanding of you know, the sporting environment and what it takes for a sports team to be successful. But that's right. It's about setting the right intensity for the team, isn't it? Because it's no good just, you know, one person saying, right, well, we're going to operate at this level of intensity and nobody else can match that. And again, it's when things aren't going well. That's normally when it's tough, when people are getting frustrated and, you know, a good team or winning teams are those that can actually come through those periods and hold the thing together and learn from the issues and pull through to get where you need to be. So I think, yeah, Hannah's, I mean, already having sailed with Hannah now for a season, you can see she, you know, she absolutely has those leadership capabilities and understands that's what it takes.
Nick, from your perspective as a coach on a sabbatical, but as a coach, what is the best way to get the best out of people, out of a team?
Oh, I've tried all the techniques and there is no one way. Everyone's different, I think, is what I've learned. So for me, my squad was four sailors, really, but they're all completely different and they all take completely different approaches from me to get the best out of them. I think I started probably, this is what I'd want to hear. So this is how I'm going to coach you. Or this is how I was coached. So this is what I'm going to do. But it doesn't work. And I think always the best way is just to, if you can gain their respect, then you're on a winner. And as soon as they start believing in you and believing that you're 100% trustworthy and there to help in every way, then you get the best out of that person. But as soon as they question anything, it can be quite hard. And of course, they should question stuff. But often they'll question things to the level where you just don't get through to them, or they just don't have 100% confidence in what you're saying. And then you're up against it, and then you have to break through on every level. But occasionally it'll just click and something you've said works really well, and then you get their real buy-in and they actually start to listen. That's the wrong phrase, but they start to really trust everything you say.
It's all about trust, and isn't it? It's what you just said.
Yeah, it's all about trust. Yeah.
Nick, I'm really interested.
Because we don't have the right answers all the time. No. Sometimes you just have to ask the right questions.
Nick, I'm really interested to hear when you went through to the coaching and the process that would have required and then working with the different athletes. Did you then think back to your own performance as a competitor and think, actually, there's a whole load of stuff I've learned here that if I went back and actually had the fitness and so on, I could compete, that would have helped you with a different, slightly different mindset and approach to it?
I don't know.
Maybe not.
I often look back, you know, having never won... Oh, your turn. Having never won an Olympic medal, you know, having a bronze and two silvers and a fourth, I could easily always look back as, you know, I could easily look back on that career and go, oh, if only I'd just done a bit more there, if only I'd done a bit more there, if in hindsight... I knew now. Then what I knew now, could I do it? And I don't know the answer to that, because sport is so, it's just so crazy, sport and the way things happen. And it's not that easy to just say, had I done that, I would have won. Because sport is sport and the way it is.
Do you seek, well, you must seek Nick's advice on stuff because you obviously are a couple and you do that all the time. But from a coaching perspective, do you seek his advice? How does he help you in that regard?
Yeah, definitely, all the time. Like we, you know, we finished in Singapore pretty frustrated about where we came. And you know, we were immediately talking through everything that had happened on the race course, dissecting it and chatting it through And it's so helpful for me to have Nick right there to do at any hour of the day. And he's always got a slightly different perspective on how things went down. So it's, yeah, always. And the same, you know, with the Olympic sailing, we'd always talk through, you know, the approach to a big competition and what you need during a week for a big competition. So, yeah, he's always been a really massive part of my extended coaching team, I guess.
I can't help myself. I'm debriefing Ben's decisions that he makes before he's even on the beach. And
this is great.
And Hannah and I talk about, I'm sorry, Ben, but we talk about every decision you make on the race course and, you know, what that decision was, why you made the call, what were the influences, what was going through your mind, not just the mistakes, but, you know, all the good stuff as well. And we talk about, you know, when should Hannah input, when, you know, what's going through Hannah's mind, what information does she have that Ben doesn't have? We talk about everything. And I find it really interesting. I think Hannah finds it really interesting.
This is good news.
You get two for the price of one here.
We've got a fantastic coach in Rob Wilson. Now we've got two coaches.
But yeah, we dissect everything. Sometimes we watch the racing afterwards.
Nick, to date then, what is the biggest takeaway from that?
Ooh. I don't know. I think that there is a level of communication and trust that is evolving between Ben and Hannah. I think that relationship will get better and better and better. I think the more confidence Hannah has in the boat and the more confidence Ben has in Hannah's input, I think that they could be not unbeatable. It's a very competitive fleet. It's an unbelievably competitive fleet, but I think that they can be better than they have been in the past with a better working relationship on the boat. And that's just time. That's not a criticism at how it is. It's just what's going to happen in the future.
Well, we're at the start, aren't we?
Yeah, at the start of a journey, yeah.
And on this journey, Hannah, one of the things that really matters to you passionately is the sustainability message and what you're doing in that area. And Nick, from your perspective as well, like, how has Hannah changed your world by being very sustainable in everything she does?
She's quite annoying at times. She picks up on everything because I'm naturally not quite as good as Hannah. So if I walk in with something that I shouldn't have, or if I'm planning to do something that is maybe not the most sustainable, I get shot down pretty quickly. You have to have somebody in the family that's
driving it.
Yeah, because otherwise we would all just fall back into our easy old habits. And it is a big deal. And Hannah is changing the way that we live our life. And we just need more people doing it.
How does it manifest itself though on a day-to-day basis in your household? If I'm to get better and learn from someone, teach me.
I think the biggest thing is like the easy wins. Yeah, there's the easy wins, Georgie. Don't you worry. And that's simple one: switching to a renewable energy supplier. That's an easy one. But for, like, how you live. We just question, you know, if we're going to buy something, do we need it, actually? Do we really need it? Or can we buy it secondhand? Or has a friend got it, we can borrow it? You don't always need something new. And I think that's a really big one to change, because it's so easy nowadays to just go on Amazon and click yes and buy it now. And we all do it, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we don't. But, yeah, it's just question, do we need it? Or can we do it better? Or can we change how we do it? And I think that'll make a big difference.
It is a perpetual challenge, isn't it, that's facing us? I mean, Hannah, put it into context. I mean, how big a problem do you believe right now we are facing in terms of our in terms of climate change and the way that the world is going?
It's actually terrifying. I actually have days where I'm really, really down about it. And you know, Nick's very good at getting me out of that, because it's such a big problem that I just don't think people are realising quick enough at all. Yeah, it's yeah, it definitely keeps me up at night, that's for sure. Especially having Sienna, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say that because Ben and I had that conversation when he came back from a lecture. Do you remember that lecture he came back from Cambridge University? And he came back in the worst mood ever. And it was before we'd had kids. And you were just so gloomy about the prospect of what life would be like for them moving forward. Mm. And, you know, we had that very real conversation about, you know, whether it was a responsible thing to bring children into that world and into that environment. Is that in your mind too?
Yeah, it definitely was. 100%. I thought about that for sure. Because, you know, I look at her now and I just think, God, what is the world going to be in 30 years' time? What are you going to have to deal with and face? And it's pretty terrifying. Yeah. But ultimately, we chose to have a baby. and I guess I just hope that through education and support, we can, you know, she might be... Add to the world. She might bring something to the world.
Yeah, but Hannah, I mean, yeah. At least you're, you know, what you've done as a, you know, as an athlete and the voice that you have getting out there and really standing for something, I think, you know, that's really admirable. So you're going about it the right way. And like you say, just need more people to, you know, try and embrace that change and focus on bringing technologies together that can really make a difference. And, you know, it's step by step.
Do you feel the responsibility as an athlete, Hannah? I mean, a lot of people talk about this. There's sort of, it's not just doing what you do out there on the sports field or, you know, on the ocean in your case. But do you feel that responsibility of being a role model?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. You know, we as athletes have a platform for various reasons to speak to media, to reach mass audiences. You know, I'm you know, not a huge profile. There's many athletes that have a massive profile, and using that platform for me is critical, and it's a huge responsibility that people need to sort of understand. And yeah, it's something that I'm working on a bit in the background, is trying to help athletes understand their platform and the responsibility that they can have in fighting for these causes that we care about.
It feels like everyone is definitely getting the message. It's just a question of whether they're getting it quickly enough, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're not. Definitely. There's always a lot of slippery shoulders. Someone else's problem. Someone else will solve it. But I think the language we're using is wrong about the climate crisis. You know, everyone's like, oh, we're saving the planet. Well, we're not saving the planet, actually. The planet's going to be totally fine. You know, it's been through far worse than humans and come out the other side. So actually we're fighting for ourselves and we're fighting for our future. And I think, you know, the more we can talk about it in that context, perhaps the more people will be galvanised to actually think, oh, God, this is me. I'm fighting for me and my family and society and everything. So, yeah, I think we do need a bit of a language change.
I think that's really interesting because that is, like you say, you in that moment, you've just made it completely relatable to people in a way that perhaps they weren't getting before, because it didn't, like you say, they couldn't work out how it directly impacted their lives in that regard. But the minute you change the language, suddenly that's a complete shift in thinking about it, because you suddenly start thinking, well, actually, no, it is my life, it's my child's life, it's, you know, all of our families. I mean, you start being, maybe you have to be a little selfish in your thinking in order to make a change.
Exactly. Like, you know, you think, oh, melting ice caps and deforestation in the Amazon and stuff. It's all like, yes, obviously I care about that, but it's not in my face right now affecting my life. And so it's, you know, stuff. I don't think that's necessarily enough to create the response that we need. You know, we need to be treating this like the biggest global emergency we've ever faced. And we're not, you know, we saw how quickly we reacted to the pandemic and how quickly things came into place and we did what needed to be done. Whether we did enough is a different story, but we did what we could do. And it's not the same for this emergency, because for whatever reason, I think it feels like it's tomorrow's problem or in the future, you know, it's not a now emergency. That's what I think a lot of people feel. And so how we change that narrative so that people do feel like it's a now emergency, I think is critical to whether we come out of it in the best shape we possibly can, because I think, you know, we're gonna feel the effects of climate change. We already are. So it's not really a matter of can we solve climate change. It's more how bad is it going to be, and how bad is it going to get before we do treat it as the emergency that it is.
On a more positive note, performance tips moving forward in life. And you'll notice that Nick went away for a short period of time and came back with a baby that is far more content and fast asleep. So there's a performance tip right in itself. Whatever you went and did, it totally nailed it. Nick, give us a performance tip for people who want to improve their everyday performance.
Oh, as in life performance? Oh, performance tip. I don't know. You go first.
There's a few you could give. I guess, I think for me, when I'm performing to a high level, I put, you know, a good amount of pressure on myself to adhere to a routine about my day. I think we're both terrible when we don't have a routine. You know, we just flit around and we're not that productive and we feel like we've wasted, you know, a morning or an hour or, you know, whatever it is. And we're just, I think that actually gets us quite down sometimes, doesn't it? And so when we actually put routine into our day and set little targets that we're trying to achieve, just something simple like that makes such a big difference to just how we feel about ourselves and how much we feel like we've achieved. And I know, you know, life's not about constantly achieving, but I think we all get those good endorphins and things from feeling like we have achieved. So I do think that is a really important part of living just an everyday life is putting little markers on what you want to do and setting a routine.
Okay. I think it, for me, it's all of life is always about communication. And if at any point you just think, oh no, I'll just leave it that for that person to contact me, or, you know, I'll just wait, or, you know, what's happening with this? I'm not really sure. Always just pick up the phone. Try not to send an email, just pick up a phone or, you know, a text and be really, really on top of it, because bad communication is just the death of everything. Productivity and expectation and disappointment.
Relationships
with people. Everything's just, you know, if you can nail your communication with people and be really proactive and be the person that reaches out, then always it's always better.
I completely agree with that. It's nailed it.
Guys, thanks so much. I mean, that could have been a nightmare, and it wasn't at all. It was lovely because Sienna behaved like a true trooper. A total performance baby.
She was a real
baby.
Star, I think.
Yeah.
That show. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Well, that was a seriously interesting chat.
Are you now going to tell me that you're going to give it all up and come on the road? Road to where? The road to the office in Wimbledon?
Nah. Sorry, it's going to happen. But I'm in awe of Nick.
Yeah,
I really am. And also the trust that they have between one another. What a great couple. And, you know, Hannah's able to come back so quickly after having baby Sienna and Nick supporting that. And, you know, they're out there doing it together.
Yeah, it is seriously impressive. In this world of equal opportunities, it's still rare to come across a guy who's a competitive guy like he is. And he's prepared to give all that up and go on the road with her and live that version of their dream rather than have the dream job that he talked about previously. And maybe he'll go back to it, of course, in the future.
Yeah.
But for the moment, they're very focused on that. But yeah, how refreshing is what I would say.
I'm sure he will. And very selfless and brave.
It is indeed. Said all the right things. Thank you for listening and or watching. This has been Performance People. We are Georgie and Ben Ainsley. And remember, from what we've learnt today, communication is important, as is trust.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.